Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because, well, we have with us this morning this evening, a very, very special guest. And I don't know anybody who has a better grasp of the true nature of this battle than Gary Cobb, Hope the World Ministries. And, of course, Gary has, he's been at this for a number of years. He used to work for the government in Indiana. He had a nice plush government job traveling throughout the world, getting people to buy the goods produced by Indiana companies. And then he began to hear about this concept of a new world order. Well, he didn't know what it was, but he began to research it. And the more he read about it, the more alarmed he became. And when he began talking about it, he was given an offer, either keep quiet about the new world order or quit your job. And of course, he quit his job, and he's been on the front lines of this battle ever since then, trying to wake the American people to the fact that we are involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization. Gary, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Dr. Stan. It's good to be with you.
Well, you understand you've been doing a lot of traveling recently all across the world, trying to get people to understand what's going on?
Yes, that's correct. Since March, I've been in 8 countries and spent some time getting the message out in the South Pacific in March, and then Mexico, and then Scotland. And then in May, I spent 10 or 11 days in India at a pastor's conference there, approximately 50 pastors, and a number of their acquaintances came together. And one of my books was translated into Telugu, which is spoken by several hundred million people over there, and they're doing the best that they can to get that message out in India, which is a real blessing to me because, of course, India is such a bastion of pantheism, and a lot of the beliefs that we're taking issue with emanate from there. And so to have the message going out in India through many people in that country is indeed a blessing. And then in June, we were in Germany, France, and Switzerland. And my family was able to join me on that trip, which doesn't happen very often. But we sang and spoke in several churches. My wife and children are all musically gifted, unlike myself, and so they were able to come with us, and we had a wonderful time together ministering. And then just 2 weeks ago, I was in England, and spent time there doing a talk show and speaking engagements as well. Learned a lot about some of the things going on in the royal family there through one specific contact who's pretty close to people of royal descent, and not the royal family, but a bit of a distant cousin connection there. But anyway, what this person shared with me was quite interesting.
Well, what is going on with the royal family? Because, of course, they're very high in this whole world occult movement.
Yeah. Well, just today, funny that you ask, Prince Andrew was here in Indianapolis, where I live, visiting the Scottish Rite Cathedral. This was on the news just an hour ago. I just caught it.
Well, of course, to most people, that would be, you know, so what? But, of course,
right.
That really, why don't you explain to our listeners why that's so significant? Why Prince Andrew going to the Scottish Rite Cathedral there in Indiana would be of anybody significance to anybody?
Yeah, I've told you he's going to be visiting the racetrack, too, like everybody does who comes into town. But his main visit and purpose for being here was to be at the Scottish Rite Cathedral, where he was part of some type of fundraising charitable group. And I do not know, although it sounds like that group is affiliated with the Masonic Lodge here in the state of Indiana. Now, what is interesting is that there's been a long tightness between various members of the royal family and the Institution of Freemasonry in England. And having been over there just recently, the things that I learned, I have to be careful how I share this, because if I say certain specifics, it may give out my source. One of the members of the parliament over there right now is, in fact, a Satanist. He also happens to be a very high-ranking Freemason. And one person who was involved in a type of satanic ritual, a female, who was 8 months pregnant with a child that came through the satanic ritual that she had involved herself in with high-level people. They took the baby from her when she was 8 months pregnant, opening up her womb. At that point, she became extremely frightened, and afterwards she tried to leave and went on the run. And they have a number of safe houses in England and Scotland, as is the case in the United States, where people wanting to come out of the occult, specifically Satanism, have a place to go to where they can feel safe. And anyway, the person that took this lady in for several months was sharing with me some of the details that he learned and how involved this all is in the highest levels of the British government.
And I think what you're really saying is that there are Satanists at the highest levels of the British government, and I don't know why that should surprise anybody, because I believe they are Satanists at the highest level of our government. And
well, yeah.
We know that Hillary, when the White House had Jean Houston come in to conjure up some spirits for her, and Nancy Reagan was always with her astrologers, and every week she was consulting with the astrologers and directing the course of our government. So really, it's sort of bipartisan occultism at the highest levels of government working right in the White House.
Well, it is. It's the same here as over there. It's just in England, it's all the more blatant. Here in the United States, you still have a strong enough minority of Christians that certain things are kind of carefully swept under the rug and kept out of the public eye, whereas in England, it's out in the open. You walk down a small town out in the country, which I did, a town of several thousand people, and you've got advertisements inside storefronts for seances, tarot card readings, and not just here and there, but just all over the place. You can just feel the occultism. It's so thick. And then to find out different ways in which the royal family ties into all of this, and Prince Charles, of course, a couple of years ago said he's not going to be the defender of the faith, but the defender of the faiths. He has completely committed himself to interfaithism and bringing the world's religions together. And one person in particular that we need to pray for is Prince William. At the present moment, and I can't go into full details on this, but he has some very strong Christian influences in his life, at least for the moment. Now, I don't know how long it's going to last, but he's had those influences there. And, of course, he's coming of age, and he's going to have to make big choices in his life, and his future is pretty much planned out for him. And if he does choose the path of Christ, you know, who knows, it could even be that his life would be in danger. There are certain Masonic interests in that country that have plans for the royal family, and if you don't play along with that, you're in deep trouble. And I was amazed to find the degree in Britain, the percentage of the people, the common people as well as you know, people of some wealth and formal education, expressed to me their feeling that Diana was in fact killed, that it was not an accident. And some of the things that came through on television in Europe never made television here. One of them through the Italian television, for example, that revealed certain details that wasn't revealed in England. And so anyway, you know, I could go on and on about this, but clearly I think her purpose was to birth future royalty. And when she began making certain statements regarding the royal family, such as one statement when she was asked how she feels about the constant barrage of reporters and the royal lifestyle, and she said she's learned to deal with everything except for the men in black, is what she said. And on different occasions in her life, that was taken to mean in the last year or two by knowledgeable members of the public, but that was a reference to not only the equivalent of the Secret Service over there, but also many of the Freemasons that were regularly around the royal family. So enough said on that, but it was an interesting trip, and I came back a bit overwhelmed, to be honest with you. With I think it was, for me, it was as much of a learning trip as much as me being over there to inform people in that country. I did manage to do one radio interview on Premier Radio, which goes out to quite a number of people over there. And that radio network has been under extreme difficulty, to the point where they were told if they had one more infraction, they'd be off the air, mainly because in England, paganism and the occult has been elevated to the status of being an official religion. Not only that, but in England, you cannot speak out against any other religion. And that is law. And so now that the occult and paganism has been elevated to that status, you cannot speak out on it anymore.
Well, then that's amazing, you know, because I did a program over there on a regular secular station, and I talked about my Christian faith, and apparently after I got off the station, it was the largest talk show in all of England. You know, every call was criticizing my Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
So I guess it's all right to criticize Christianity, but you better not say anything about paganism.
Well, and the amazing thing is, regarding Islam, while I was there, of course, I was there over September 11th. On September 11th, leading radical Muslims held a huge powwow at one of the main mosques there in London, openly talking about how what happened on 9/11 was not a bad thing, that this was something that deserved, that furthered the cause of Islam, on and on and on. And this was covered on the front page of a number of the British newspapers. This meeting was going on. They knew all about it. They knew that many of the country's top radical Muslims, including some that might have direct links to terrorism, would be there. They did absolutely nothing to stop it, and these guys were able to say whatever they wanted to say. But if you're a Christian and you go on the air and lovingly explain why you believe the way that you do and that Jesus Christ is the only way and here's why, you can get knocked off the air.
Well, you know, the thing is that when we go to war in the Near East, not if, but when we go to war in the Middle East, why, of course, I suspect that Britain will back us. And it may well be what will trigger terrible, terrible violence among the very, very large Muslim population they have in England. And I wonder if they've really considered that.
Well, I think they are. And there's a lot of opposition in England to going into Iraq because they are afraid of the ramifications. So far, the main focus has been on the United States and New York City specifically. But with, I think, somewhere around 3 million Muslims in England, something like that, which is a much higher percentage than we have here in the United States. England being a country of about 55 million, so what would that be? That's close to 6% of the population. Mm-hmm. And some of them have great wealth and influence over there and hold key positions as well. And so, and you have some of those cells operating right out of London. So I think that's going to influence to some degree the people in England, and the same is the case in Germany. What people here aren't aware of, perhaps, is that Germany has a huge Turkish population. And back in the days when German unemployment rate was down around 4 or 5%, back in the 80s, Germany opened up the doors because they needed workers. They needed somebody to do the dirty work that none of the Germans wanted to do because they had the better jobs at that time. And so they opened up the doors, and a lot of Turks came in. And then when times turned more difficult, and a lot of the government money over there began going toward rebuilding Berlin, and the unemployment rate went up, a lot of the Germans wanted those jobs back, and would have been great to have them, but you had all these Turks in the country now, and it didn't set too well with them to try to send them back home. And so they've got a brewing powder keg there as well now. And so I think that's one reason Schroeder, being aware of that situation, was going with the popular vote, appealing to voters' sentiments to try to get reelected, because I think they're afraid of what might happen if Islam is stirred up in that country. So in a very subtle way, but in a major way, during the last 20 years or so, Islam has come into the Western countries in a major way that was not the case in the 50s and 60s. Most of this has happened since the mid-70s, but especially in the last 15 years or so. And so, I mean, all these things have to be considered in how a nation responds, at least publicly. I am no fan of Saddam Hussein. I'd love to see him out of power, but you have to ask some serious questions in analyzing the situation from every angle possible. The first question is, why are we still buying oil by the millions of dollars every day from Iraq if they're our supposed enemy and we're getting ready to go to war with them? That would seem to be the first thing that you stop doing is providing that business dollar flow into that country.
And, you know, the other thing would be why I would think that we would, we really wanted to harm them and put pressure on them, we would ask the United Nations to reinvoke the embargo so that they couldn't sell any oil to anybody and strangle them economically. But you see, we're not doing any of the logical things. We're doing everything that is illogical. And the most illogical thing is to go to war in the Mideast all by ourselves and take the chance of inflaming 1.2 billion Muslims. Well, you know, let's get a little bit onto something that you probably know more about than anybody I know, and that is, of course, you read a great deal of Alice Bailey's work. Now, Alice Bailey, for our listeners out there, was a Luciferian. She was the dominant force in this movement during from about 1920, 1940. I think she lived until the 1950s, but she wrote, I think, pretty close to 20 books. Or they were channeled to her, but she talked about this idea of a New World Order. Of course, she talked about points of light, and those of you remember that George Bush's very famous talk about points of light, and everybody thought, gee, that's a great phrase, not knowing that it had come from a Luciferian, very well often quoted by her, and quoted and attributed to her, but of course, Barbara Walters isn't going to tell you where George Bush got that idea. That's George Herbert Walker Bush. But what did Alice Bailey say about this whole idea of world government, and what was going to bring it around? What was going to create this?
Well, Bailey, in her book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy, said, and I quote this, I quote her on page 161 of my book, The New World Religion. She says, the three main channels through which the preparation for the new age is going on might be regarded as the church, the Masonic fraternity, and the educational field. Of course, as the church here, she's talking about the apostate church. But she spoke often of using the church to actually bring this in. And when you see what's happening today, Stan, in most denominations, at the forefront, among the leaders, they are pushing this idea of the New World Order and even interfaithism now. And you've got the World Council of Churches, to which many of the mainline denominations belong, that's pushing a false type of global unity that's right on the bandwagon with the UN on most fronts. And, you know, what's amazing is Bailey wrote this back during the time around World War II, and almost everything she said is happening today or has already happened. When I was in England, I was one of the speakers at a conference, but one of the other speakers put up on the screen 10 points that Alice Bailey made through her writings of things that would happen by around the year 2000. And every one of them, as you went down the line, I wish I had it here in front of me, but I don't, but each one of them has happened. And she spoke in her writings of one final event that might be used to trigger the New World Order if all else failed, talking about an international crisis, another type of Third World War, of World War. And I think, well, I, like you and others, I'm sensing that if we're not real careful, this current business of going into Iraq with the situation being as explosive as it is in the Islamic countries, it could set off World War III. I mean, I hope it doesn't, but it could. And when you have people, even in the secular media, analysts, talking about the possibility of World War III and the fact that Saddam may already have the nuclear bomb, which he does. He does have it. But we haven't been told that widely. Here and there it leaks out. You get the feeling that if he believes that Bush Jr. is going to go after him, that he's going to use whatever he has at his disposal. The only question a few years ago, when I found out that Saddam does have nuclear bombs, was can he deliver them on missiles? And I personally believe that during the Persian Gulf War, when he was lobbing those missiles into Israel, he was just testing to see how far he could fire them and how accurate he could be. And I would imagine since that time they've been working on putting nuclear weapons on those missiles. And I think Israel, having possibly the best intelligence in the world, would certainly be aware of that. And so if they have any inkling at all that Iraq is getting ready to launch something at them, they're not going to have a choice but to, you know, take charge. And I think they've made that clear to send a signal to Iraq. But anyway, what is happening here is potentially very explosive, and it could change our world almost overnight. I was sharing the other day with a friend, imagine what just one nuclear weapon going off would do to the world sentiment right now. It's been over 50 years since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Our generation in this country really hasn't known global war. You know, we've been in and out of small conflicts, but not a sustained war. Something like that happening would just blow people away, and I think they'd be ready to embrace something new that could promise to deliver on world peace. And in the past, that's how Satan has worked. World War I led to the League of Nations, World War II to the United Nations. Could it be the third major conflict could lead us to a full-blown global government system? People are always willing to accept major change during times of crisis, much more readily than when they don't have a reason to do so. So we need to be on our knees in prayer. Christians listening to this program, I can just say I have an extreme sense of urgency. We are never to lose hope. Our hope is in Jesus Christ, and we know that no matter what happens in this world, that in the end, we will be with him in eternity. But we still live in this world day to day, and we have families, we have things that we are concerned about. And now is the time to be preparing ourselves spiritually and mentally, and to some degree physically, for what may be difficult days ahead. We need to know how we're going to respond to situations that may arise, and we also need to make sure we're being effective witnesses to others. So, and I would also ask listeners, Stan, to be praying for us and our family, because we've been, this year, for whatever reason, in the last few months, I have traveled as never before around the world, and all these doors have been opened where people have invited us. We have not pushed down any doors, and it's as if God is saying, the time is short, the message has to go out now, it needs to go out around the world quick, and just go for it. And so we're doing everything we can, and I just want to be in the right place at the right time to get the message out, as I know you feel the same way.
Well, the thing is that God's leaving me behind the microphones, and he's sending you out across the world, but our message is almost identical. Now, let's let our listeners know how they can get in touch with your ministry, Hope for the World.
We publish a regular newsletter. It's a research newsletter where we actually reproduce much of the evidence that we talk about. And if you would like to subscribe to our newsletter, you can dial our order line at 317-290-4673. That's 317-290-4673. And we also have information about some of our videotapes on that line. Also, you can write to us at Hope for the World, P.O. Box 899. That's in Noblesville, Indiana. And our zip code is 46061. Again, that's 46061. And I would ask people to be patient, because I am on the road so much these days that one area I'm really lacking right now is a correspondence. So if people call with questions, we generally try to address them in the newsletter, because it's just absolutely become impossible to respond to everybody.
Well, we find ourselves very much in the same category. The telephone number again is 317-290-4673. The address is Hope for the World, Post Office Box 899, Noblesville, Indiana 46061. And Gary's material is excellent. We do carry his book, En Route to Global Occupation, and New World Religions, and we think the latter book is one of the most important books you'll ever read, because it has so many of the quotations from Alice Bailey. And of course, Alice Bailey, the Luciferian, always talked about the New World Order. And who do you equate that phrase with? Well, not Alice Bailey, but one of her disciples, a man named George Herbert Walker Bush, who not only used that word New World Order, but he also used the points of light phrase that comes right from Alice Bailey. So, yeah, and of course, in Gary's book, he actually has pictures that come from the original publications of what was known as the Lucifer Publishing House, that eventually became known as the Lucius Trust, which is today still operating there in New York City and in Geneva and in London. And of course, its goal is this one world order through the United Nations.
Well, Lucius Trust, which was originally founded as Lucifer Publishing Company, and we do have the documentation for that in Exhibit C. In my book, we took it out of a title page of one of Bailey's first books before they changed the name 2 years later to Lucius Trust, and it, of course, still exists under that name. But it was founded around the same time as the Council on Foreign Relations, and there's been some cross-membership over the years between those two organizations. And if you study the founding of the United Nations, you know that the concept of the UN was promoted in the post-war foreign policy committee, and 11 of the 14 members on that committee were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And so between the Council on Foreign Relations and Lucius Trust, the influence on the founding of the United Nations has been enormous. And then also the Rockefeller money, which your listeners would be well acquainted with that, I'm sure, the fact that the land upon which the UN is built in New York City was donated by the Rockefellers. And they happen to be major funders, have been over the years, of the Council on Foreign Relations and have been on the board of directors. And it's been said that the CFR is basically a family organization, being spearheaded by the Rockefellers, and I don't think that's too far from the truth. And then you consider that today, Mikhail Gorbachev, who is the most visible spokesperson on behalf of the New World Order, has Stephen Rockefeller on his board of directors of Green Cross International, of which Gorbachev is the president. So it's amazing the common thread of personages that runs through this New World Order movement, some of it going back three or four generations.
And, of course, we really are dealing with intergenerational and cultism. And, of course, one of people have missed the fact that Rockefellers have been deeply involved in financing the occult for many years, but always in the background, because that is one of the most carefully kept secrets in the world today. Well, we're going to have to take a break when we get back. Well, welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when we have to once again remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide right now that you want to join the Radio Liberty family and partner with us in our effort to bring the truth to people across America. And God has given us that rare opportunity to be now about 50 different outlets across America, some of them only half an hour a week, some every day for an hour a day. It depends on the area, but we are reaching people. And when you join the Radio Liberty family, why, you help us do what we do. You become part of our team. And so if you're concerned about what's happening, if you're concerned that the average person really has no idea what's happening, he's simply a victim of the controlled media, and believe me, the media is controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. We have a wonderful article that appeared in the Washington Post, written by one of their staff writers, who tells how almost the entire media in America, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, they all tie into the Council on Foreign Relations, Reader's Digest, Time, Newsweek magazine. They all tie into this one centralized control that ultimately controls what the American people think. That's why you will never see in a newspaper in America, with one or two minor exceptions, any mention of the Bilderberger Group. You'll read about it if you go to Europe. You'll read about it if you go to Canada. But because of the degree of control over the American media, the mainline press never talks about that. Oh, they talk about the Council on Foreign Relations now as if it was the most normal thing in the world. But you go back 30 years when I first got started studying this, you would never find mention of the Council on Foreign Relations in either mainline establishment media or even in the communist media, which tells you a great deal about who finances and controls communism. But of course, if you'd like to help us do what we do, tell others about our programs. Tell them about our website, radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. Make copies of our newsletters. Make copies of our audio tapes, and you can get them off the Internet, or you can get them from us. And then, of course, get other people reading and thinking and challenging, because we're in a battle for the heart and soul, the minds of the American people. And, of course, what we can do, well, our job is to turn people to Christ, to give them an understanding of the spiritual nature of the battle, and that in times like these, if the best thing you can do is bring people into the kingdom. So remember again our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war. America is under siege today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Gary Kaw from Hope of the World Ministries. And if you're out there across America, why, give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And there's nobody who has a better grasp of what's going on today than our guest this evening. So if you have any questions or something you always wanted to ask but were afraid to, this is the time to do it. because Gary's had the opportunity of traveling throughout the world in recent months. And I think, of course, what we have to do is reach as many people. I think, in many ways, do you have the feeling sometimes, Gary, that you're reaching the remnant?
Yes. I mean, a good percentage of our population has heard or has been warned, at least to some degree, about the New World Order and things coming down the pike. Most people that have their radios on at all have heard bits and pieces of this message. But as far as really getting into the details of it and people doing something about it and being drawn closer to the Lord and giving their lives to Him and allowing Him to use them, you're looking at a very, very small percentage. I'd say certainly less than 5% of the American population, maybe just 2 or 3%. And that really shouldn't come as a surprise, though, because in Scripture, Jesus said it would be like that in the last days.
And, of course, they talk about the great apostasy, the great falling away from the church, from the teachings of the church.
That's right, and we're certainly seeing that today. When you read Matthew chapter 24 and also Paul's writings in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the times we're living in today seem to be what they were describing. And things are speeding up now. Things are going so much more rapidly. In one generation, let's talk about America for a moment. In one generation, this country has gone downhill morally more quickly than any other country in the history of the world. The Roman Empire took a couple hundred years to self-destruct, but basically America has done it in one generation. And I believe there's coming a time when there's going to be a price to be paid. We've been living on borrowed time because of the wisdom of our forefathers and very wise laws that they put in place, and it has taken time to erode all of that away. But we're to the point now where when the kinds of things are openly being discussed like they are, last night I was absolutely blown away. It was probably around 10 o'clock at night. I was unwinding. I was tired, and I watched some of the headline news and then went over a couple of stations. And here's this conversation between three women on primetime television about their bisexuality and their experiences with both men and with other women and which they prefer the most. And I'm thinking, I can't, this is not on a screened out television program. This is on one of the regular cable stations with children awake watching this, and I thought this is just incredible that this is what we've come to. We've got openly gay members of Congress now. We've got a situation where pedophiles now are taking a stand. It's just a matter of time till that comes in a big way in this country. In Canada, they already have organizations promoting that with some legality, and I'm thinking, how much longer is God going to wait? And it's not just homosexuality, but it's so many other things too in this country, and so I'm torn because I love my country. I'm very patriotic. I thank the Lord that I live here, that we've had the kind of freedoms that we've had, but I also see the rampant immorality that historically no country has gotten away with something like this as long as the United States has. I mean, in the Old Testament, when you read and study the history of Israel, oftentimes what happens is those people who once knew the truth and believed it, when they become corrupt, they become even more corrupt than the nations surrounding them. And God sent His prophets to warn Israel of coming destruction if they didn't repent. When the Israelites repented, they were spared, but when they didn't, the enemies around them would be allowed to overtake them for a time until they did repent. And I believe that's still how things work today. The United States has carried a banner of Christianity. I mean, we have sent more missionaries out around the world perhaps than any other country in the history of the world. And yet, amazingly, we've also exported more smut, more negative things that have negative impact around the world than perhaps any other country. And people in Romania, there now, you walk down the street and you can buy pornography on any street corner that comes from the United States, things that weren't even possible under communism. And, it, you know, it breaks your heart. And I believe that, that this war that we're about to enter into could backfire on us, because I don't believe at this time we have God's protective covering over us. I think 9/11 showed that. And, you know, you don't want to... There's so many people that were affected and had loved ones lost in that, and you don't want to say that, that everybody who dies in a situation like that, this is somehow part of God's judgment. And I'm not saying that, because I know there were some Christians that died in that as well. But I do believe God has a way of lifting his protective covering from a nation the more that it sins. And right now, we don't have a reason to be arrogant, boastful, and proud. We ought to be on our knees in repentance and taking a very humble approach, and I don't see any of that. You know, and for people to be waving the flag and shouting "God bless America" and thinking somehow that's going to do magic, that's not going to work. I mean, there needs to be complete repentance from the leadership down. Instead of going to interfaith services and visiting Islamic mosques, President Bush needs to be a leader to this nation right now. As a Christian, he needs to be a Christian leader and openly speak out for Jesus Christ and invoke prayers to him. And he has not done that. And so I cringe when I hear about the war talk going into Iraq and what may happen.
Well, you know, I was just reading a very interesting article before we came on the air by Paul Craig Roberts. And he talked about, you know, in the past, of course, America was a very wealthy nation. Today, America is the greatest debtor nation in the world. Today, at one time, America had great moral integrity and moral fortitude. We don't have great moral fortitude today. I mean, cheating and lying is a way of life, and we brought up a whole generation of our children to disbelieve in God. And, of course, we do not have an industrial base anymore. We've set most of this throughout the rest of the world. We are living off the labors of other people. Because their goods are cheap and because our dollar is strong. But what happens if the Islamic people of the world decide that they are going to attack the American dollar? As Osama bin Laden said in one of his remarks, attack their economy, attack them financially, and of course they will collapse. And of course, is he right? Well, I think we're going to find out very, very soon. But if the Islamic countries refuse to deal in American dollars, they refuse to buy our goods, they refuse to sell us oil, why, this country would crumble in a matter of a very, very few months. If the Islamic people in this country, even a very, very small portion of them, really were inflamed in anger and willing to give their lives, as are the suicide bombers over in Palestine, believing the only way that they can go to paradise for certain is by killing infidels, don't you think that a certain number of them would do it? And, of course, you would never know who they were, because they would look just like anybody else in the Islamic community. And so we have created an impossible situation, I think, both for ourselves, and I fear the same thing fate will wait for Great Britain. It also turns its back on God. Once the center of Christendom, Great Britain probably is even further along the road to moral degeneracy and hedonism than we are here.
Yeah, and back for a moment to the economic point you were making. You know, right now... the Dow Jones is down about one-third from its peak, and the NASDAQ about almost two-thirds. That would be considered a collapse by any standard. And so when you already look at the wealth that has been erased off the books in the last 2 years or so in this country, that's money that is not going to be there to be able to be spent, you know, down the road to help rejuvenate the economy. And that's one reason why, in spite of the fact that interest rates are so low, consumers just aren't spending the way they have in the past to spend us out of recessions. Interest rates are about as low as they can go, and except for people getting some good deals on cars and houses, but almost everybody's come into the housing market. I mean, you know, you can, in other words, we're running out of fuel right now, and unless something drastically changes in the next few months, I think next year is going to be tough. And you look at the bond market as well. So many foreigners are invested in our bonds that if they got jittery because of attacks on the United States and began pulling their bond money out. That alone could be enough to collapse things. And then there's all the corporate takeovers. I don't know if people have noticed this or not, but so many American companies have been bought out by foreign entities in the last few years. Here in Indianapolis, which, you know, is in the heartland, we've had one company after another, RCA Corporation, or the Thompson Consumer Electronics, which employed thousands of people here in central Indiana, was bought out by a French company who made all kinds of promises about, you know, commitment to the community and so on and so forth. Well, within a year or two of them taking over the company, they moved almost all of the jobs overseas. So the, you know, the televisions that were once produced here and many other electronic goods, many of them now produced overseas, and the profits are going to France. Eli Lilly and Company, this was in the news about 3 weeks ago, a British company was trying to take over Eli Lilly, which here locally, you know, that's unthinkable. I mean, Eli Lilly is Hoosier through and through. You know, I mean, this is a homegrown company that's been here for years and brought millions of dollars into the local economy. And now, you know, you find out a British company is trying to take that company over. Conseco is basically bankrupt. Their stock is virtually worthless. And so here in our local economy, there's nothing to cheer about right now. I mean, it's not looking good. If it wasn't for the fact that we still have a lot of small and medium-sized companies that are family-owned, which brings some of the stability to Indianapolis, we'd really be in trouble here. And what's happening here is happening around the country, too. And the banks, all the mergers that have taken place since the 1980s, where your smaller banks were bought out by bigger state banks, and then some of those state banks were bought out by regional banks, and the regional banks were bought out by even bigger banks in New York, you've got maybe 5 to 10 banks now that it's fair to say run the country. Excuse me. And if they go under, or they wouldn't have to go under, if they manipulate the economy or decide that they don't want to give you a loan, you're not going to be able to get it as a small business person. So the control, the noose has really tightened around American citizens, and most people don't even realize it yet. But I think, again, some type of if we get involved in this war and if there are any terrorist repercussions in this country, I think things could go downhill pretty quickly given the sad shape of the economy right now already.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is Global Crossing, which is a international communication. They have these cables all throughout the world. And who do you think bought up Global Crossing? Why, Hutchinson Whampoa. Who is Hutchinson Whampoa? Well, a large part of that is the Chinese military. It is a Chinese communist company with strong ties to the Chinese military. And they are suddenly going to begin controlling a lot of our lines of communication. What in heaven's name is going on today? Once great America suddenly is becoming subservient to communist China, and of course with the massive amounts of money that they have invested a fair amount in our own government bonds, and if they were to pull their money out of our government treasury bonds and Japan were to do the same thing, why, there would be terrible. And the Saudis would do the same thing. Why, the whole economy would begin facing a tailspin, sort of staring into chaos, as somebody said recently. So, you know, for the people out there who say, oh, well, everything's fine, everything's not fine. And, of course, we can look at it from an economic point of view. We can look at it from a moral point of view. But I think we must look at it from a spiritual point of view. And when a country turns its back on God, eventually God turns his back on that country.
I agree fully, and the clock is ticking, and, you know, for years we've been sharing this message now. Since my first book came out, Stan, I've lost count, but I know I've done over 900 talk shows, and I've wondered before, you know, how much longer is the Lord going to wait? And I've never been one to cry wolf, to make a prediction of this or that going to happen. I just try to present the facts of what is going on and saying, look, if this keeps up, it's not good, and we've got to get right with God. And I remember about two to three years ago watching something on television that, again, was just appalling. And I'm not claiming that I've ever heard the audible voice of God, but this was so direct. It's as if God spoke into my spirit, "It won't be long now." And I heard that twice, and it sent chills through my body. It gave me that much more of an incentive to keep warning people to get right with the Lord. And it does sound like a negative message. And in some ways, Stan, what you and I are doing, we're a bit like the Jeremiahs, I guess. He was called the weeping prophet because he warned and warned and warned people, and many of them didn't listen, but some of them did, you know. And you do it for the sake of those who hear and who listen and who allow their lives to be changed by the Lord. But most people, they're falling right in with Psalm 2. If listeners would take just a short time after this program to read Psalm 2, it talks about how people would join together, the kings of the earth would join together to try to break their tie with God and throw off their fetters, and how God sits on his throne in heaven and laughs at them. You know, I mean, here we are. Picture going out of your home on the front porch, and you discover that there are hundreds of ants trying to build this huge hill, and you decide to sweep it off, and the next day they're right back again, and they're building an even bigger hill, and they've determined they're going to take over your house and take you over and somehow beat you, and you just sit there and laugh. You know, you think, man, don't they get it? They can't do it. I mean, and that's kind of how it is with. I mean, God is so awesome, so huge, that man is arrogant enough to think he's going to be his own God and do what he wants to do and spit in God's face, basically, and defy him in every way imaginable, totally go against Scripture, against everything. And yet our years on this earth are limited. I mean, if we're fortunate, we live to be 80 or 90 years old, and then that's it. I mean, who are we to mock God and go against him when he... It's because of God that we are here, that we owe our very existence to him, and whatever good we have comes from him. It shows how depraved man has become and how Satan over years has built one deception upon another, to the point now where people in their natural response are geared against God. And this liberation theology, this idea that we are going to be set free from the bondage that God has placed us in, this is the Luciferian teaching, of course, that Alice Bailey taught as well, and that Albert Pike of Scottish Rite Freemasonry taught, that Lucifer is the god of light, and that the god of the Christians is actually the god of darkness, and that Lucifer is coming to take his seat of authority through a future person and will basically rule the affairs of mankind and liberate mankind. It's just, you know, that people could actually fall for something like this slays me, but yet they do. And the more educated we become, it seems like the worse people become, which makes you really wonder about our universities. I saw a survey about 5 years ago that directly correlated the more years of formal education a person has in college, the more liberal they become in terms of morality and open to just about anything. And I'm convinced if a person spent enough time in a typical American university, they wouldn't think there's anything wrong with pedophiles or bestiality or you name it. And I can tell you, as having gone to a so-called Christian college, and some of the classes I took already back, you know, 20 some years ago, you know, back then it shouldn't have been taking place, and it's a lot worse now. And I remember being so surprised that at a Christian college some of these things were being taught, and I thought, how much more so in secular colleges, you know?
But, you know, Gary, they've infiltrated our colleges. They've infiltrated our Christian colleges. They've infiltrated our Christian seminaries. They've infiltrated the hierarchy of the Protestant church. They've infiltrated the hierarchy of the Catholic church. Somebody just sent me a... analysis the other day of all of the cardinals, you know, who are Masons. I mean, yeah. What is a cardinal doing being a Mason? Masons are the enemy of the Catholic Church, just as, of course, they're the enemy of the Protestant Church. And yet, of course, until very recently, they totally dominated the largest Protestant denomination in this country, and that is the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, apparently the good guys have made tremendous inroads, and things seem to be looking a little bit better for our side, but the average person out here has no idea that much of the training that our ministers have gotten in their seminaries came right out of the pit of hell.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, the last count that we had was there were approximately 110 top Masons who held key positions in the Vatican. And in the Southern Baptist Church, in some states, and this was as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, up to 40% of pastors in the Southern Baptist Convention were Masons. And in the Methodist Church, here in Indianapolis, where I live, the major Methodist churches in town are all closely associated with Freemasonry, and in the Presbyterian, Episcopalian Church, basically all your mainline churches. And so Satan has worked overtime in that area, and he's been trying to wrap up the evangelical churches, and that's where his real focus has been in the last 10 years or so. And so one by one, you're seeing more and more Masons getting into churches like the Assemblies of God and various Baptist denominations and other places where in the past they didn't have as much input. But I think you're going to see a split coming in some of those church groups as a result. And if they don't split, I think it would be a mistake. I think there comes a time when a church group becomes so penetrated. Usually it takes about 50 to 100 years for Satan to get in there and get his vessels going to a point where they hold key leadership positions. And once that gains the upper hand, you're not going to turn an organization around. I have never once seen that happen so far. There may have been cases, but I'm not aware of it. So the best thing that can happen is for the group that is opposed to these things to break off and you basically start all over again. And in the Southern Baptist Convention is one group so far. They've been fighting back, but they're making inroads in some areas, and in other areas they're losing ground. So it remains to be seen if they're going to be able to pull it off or if they're going to have to split as well to get out from under that influence.
Well, I think that the tragedy is that most Christians have no idea. The ministers will never speak out against Masonry. Some of them are frankly afraid to. Some of them don't know what it's all about. But if you are a minister and you speak out against the Masons, career will be destroyed. And I've talked to minister after minister after minister who's been forced out of his church. Why? Because he had the courage to speak out about Masonry. Now, if this is that powerful in America, why doesn't everybody know about it? And the reason they don't is because they're that powerful.
Yeah, you've got I don't know what the latest figure is, but it's in the millions, 2 to 3 million Masons, I believe, in this country. But that number is not as big as it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago. And so some people think Freemasonry is on the decline, but what they don't realize, and this needs to be voiced, is that the New Age movement as a whole was birthed by the Masonic Institution. Virtually all of the key figures in the movement were high-level Freemasons. And so basically Freemasonry has manifested itself today through the New Age movement, which has millions, tens of millions of people in this country alone that follow its teachings. So when you look at it that way, it has grown by leaps and bounds in the last 20 or 30 years. So anyway, we're running out of time. I hear the music.
We're running out of time. God bless you, Gary, and we look forward to having you with us in the not too distant future. And till then, may the Lord be with you.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye bye. And this is the time when we have to say goodbye to our listeners up in the Great Northwest. And of course, we'll be back again tomorrow evening. And we, of course, always look forward to having your calls, hearing from you. So until tomorrow evening, may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening once again. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls. We have with us Tara Pembo, and she's calling us from New Orleans, and she's down there. Tara, did the hurricane strike?
Yes, it did. It ended up being the judgment was turned into mercy by the Lord. My husband prayed that the storm's back would be broken, and it did break up as soon as it got in our area. So we were spared tremendously.
All right. Well, I'm glad for that. And Tara lives in, of course, in New Orleans, and she's a lawyer. But, of course, she gave up the practice of law, and I think she's doing a little teaching now. But her husband has a street ministry there on Bourbon Street and adjacent to Bourbon Street, and one of the centers of depravity here in the Western Hemisphere. And, of course, Jared sent me a video, which we can't talk about too much because it is so, let's put it this way, that it would go, if X is the worst, it would be even worse than the worst. But this, of course, is what goes on in the during the homosexual festivities there on St. Andrew Street, which crosses Bourbon Street. And these lost young men, who've given themselves over to their lusts and basically to the spirit of darkness are just sort of cavorting around the streets and going into these various bars and places there where the most unbelievable sort of things would go on. But they would certainly make a prostitute blush. This is the reality of what's happened in this once, very quaint area. But now, of course, it's really sort of a center of, what could get worse than this year? Well, just wait till next year and you're going to find out. Is that pretty much the case?
Yes. Well, what we've done, what happened is the Christian stood up with this video, and my husband is a gentleman. Did you watch the video?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, he's the one who said Zorro forgot to put his pants on. That's my husband. He speaks of the flesh fest that's going on. At any rate, we sent this to, we have a group called Christian Conservatives for Reform, and we sent it to the mayor, to the police chief. My husband first approached the police chief regarding this issue, and one day I hope you get to have an opportunity to talk to him because he's such a bold warrior for Christ.
He really is. I mean, your police chief's a good guy.
No, my husband.
Your husband.
No, actually, okay. We didn't get any help from the police.
Okay.
No, but we've been seeing this type of orgy. We can use the word orgy, correct?
Yeah, that would be the best possible word for
orgy. Orgy right in the middle of the street for 3 years now. The Decadence Festival used to be just fun costuming at one time.
No, it's called the Decadence Festival?
Yes.
Okay.
And that was kind of tongue-in-cheek when it started 10 years ago. It was mostly heterosexuals, and it would be like a giant theme costume party. For example, they would pick out hot issues, and everybody would dress like certain individuals. For example, when Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill had there were hearings regarding that, everybody was dressed as those two individuals. And so it was it started off not necessarily innocent, but it was just a costume party, and artists would use their artistry to make fun of certain events or and stuff like that. It was satire for the most part. Of course, way back then, the homosexuals, queens, would come, and of course they loved the costume, and so it just became more and more, however, a homosexual event. The heterosexual people backed off, and it has turned into a world-renowned time too literally. Now, I know that sex is feigned in many of the gay pride parades, but this is sex on the street. You know, you had spoken, and you spoke this week, in fact, about the Burning Man Festival and the things that go on there, and it's, they're famous for the nudity and the open sex. However, that is a community that sets up, builds itself up, and then leaves. The French Quarter is still a neighborhood, and there are still families that live there, yet our city has allowed for this festival, which used to be fun, and to turn into a complete orgy. And I'm sorry you had to look at the video. For me, when I watched it, it was like watching a car wreck, because I fortunately had never seen the things that my husband had seen that go on there, because the women, we didn't go down when the Decadence Festival goes on, or anything that's majority homosexual. Just the men go and stand boldly, and usually just stand with signs and speak. You know, we do a lot of ministry on the street, but that's just not a good time for the men, women, and families that come down and help us to go down. So he told me, he would tell me about them, but looking at it was like watching a car wreck. You know, it's so horrible, but you can't seem to take your eyes away, because it's like, it's so horrible to see it. At any rate, did you happen to listen to the tape that I sent, the audio tape?
No, I didn't have a chance to listen to that.
Well, that's I really want to rejoice that, anyway, the efforts that we've made has gotten two lesbians out of the lesbian lifestyle. Well, I mean, we did, and the Lord used it, used our efforts to have two women repent and give their lives to the Lord Jesus Christ, and that's what we're rejoicing about, because they got hold of the video and they were listening. One of the gentlemen, Grant Storms, who is the one that kind of was the point man on this whole effort to get the city to pay attention to these things going on in the quarter, he has a radio program, and so they, all the homosexuals were monitoring everything we did. We had some come to the church, which we know they had an F, you know, our church was in the French Quarter, and they wanted to probably do something to mess with us. They came in stealth, so we knew who they were, and they were going to do something. At any rate, this girl was listening for 3 weeks, very angry that these Christians had put out this video and had told the city fathers and had told the police chief and had spoken to the city council and asked them to do all this stuff. And, you know, we were full of hate and intolerance. But by virtue of us talking about it and the like, they came to see how grotesque it was. They had seen these events, and so they bow their knee to Jesus. So I hope that you get an opportunity to listen to that tape.
I'll make it a point to it, Tara. But the thing is that you're right on the front lines of this very real spiritual battle. And I think that I would not send this tape to anybody, because I'm a physician. I know just I've been through, I've seen an awful lot and I've lived an awful lot, but this is just about as depraved as you can get. On the other hand, it's important to understand that this reflects what's happening to our society today, where anything goes. And, of course, at a certain point, God is going to intervene. In fact, after seeing that tape, I couldn't help but wonder how long he can tarry. I don't know how much worse things can get. And yet this is accepted. This is on the open streets right there. Is St. Anne Street?
Yes, it's Satan Street. As I spoke to you the last time, we've dubbed that name. That was at the corner of Bourbon and Satan Street,
right.
St. Anne. And St. Anne, we know, comes out of the Gnostic Gospel. She's alleged to be the mother who gave a virgin birth to Mary and started the the perpetual virginity of Mary and the perpetual virginity of herself. At any rate, that is exactly where that all comes out of the ISIS. I just wanted to make this point because we just had Isidore. Isidore, according to the 1930 Webster's Unabridged Dictionary, definition of it is gift of ISIS. And it's just interesting. I think God had a planned judgment for our city in terms of Isidore. It was a Category 5 4 or 5 days ago. And I think only through the intervention of the Christians, and of course our efforts in terms of the second festival, standing up and doing what we needed to do as Christians, made it not as brought up God's mercy, I think. I think for our purpose, for our sake, he made the storm not the storm that it should have been. But so, I it's just interesting that you also had Mr. McTernan on this week. That was a blessing to me because I was trying to remember his name and his book regarding how when something homosexual happens or something in regards to the abortion movement or something in regards to giving Israel away, there is some natural disaster. And so I was watching Isidore with that, and I had in my spirit, I said, I bet you Isidore comes from Isis, and it does. It means gift of Isis. And, of course, that's Satan's religion. That's the religion he set up in Babylon, and that's the religion that perpetuates this type of homosexual orgy on the streets.
Well, now, of course, you and your husband work down there on the streets year-round. Mm-hmm. What sort of response do you get? I mean, some of the people understanding the spiritual nature of what's happening and realizing that they're on a one-way trip to hell?
Yes. We have the Lord really anoints. I have to give honor to where honor is due. The head of our street evangelism is Paul Gross and his wife, Maria Gross. And they've been out there for 20 years, standing on Bourbon Street with a cross, passing out tracts. And the mother of our church, as we call her, because she's our landlord, but she's a 90-year-old woman who has been standing out there for 20 years, too, passing out tracts and speaking. God has anointed these people tremendously. Because in the midst of all this, they get attacked often. They get beer thrown on them. They have people... when it gets close to these sort of festivals, disrobe in front of them and the like, and they just keep standing. And because of their standing, we get many people who will, at that moment, in the midst of their depravity, bow their head to Jesus Christ. And it's a beautiful, amazing thing. So the Lord, and I say that it's just, the Lord just asks us to stand, and we stand, and he does the rest. He does amazing things.
Well, now, do you pass out tracts? Do you talk to the people?
We pass our tracts. Most of my husband says, I've got a church full of preachers, because most people are talkers. We love to talk. And we love to talk about the Lord. We love to tell the story. And after an hour of prayer, we go out, and God just opens up opportunity after opportunity. I just believe if anybody did that one night a week in their community, they could, bring so many people into the kingdom, because miraculously, people, we start speaking, our words are anointed, we're just, fleshy human beings, but when the anointing comes down, amazing things happen. And so, yes, many people, we have it, Paul and Maria go out 3 times a week. My husband and I, we join them on Tuesday night only because I do most of my work at night. And unfortunately, I've been teaching at night, so I haven't been able to go out with them on Tuesday night. But the Lord anoints me on Tuesday night in my classes, which is kind of interesting, too. But
are you teaching at school or university or what?
Yeah, I'm at I teach law at a community college. And right now, I offered myself to a friend of mine who's a lawyer. I'm not practicing law, but I go, and he's a criminal lawyer. And what God's opened the doors for me to go into the prisons. And so all of his prison visits, I get to go, and I go and I pray with these people, and I bring them the gospel, and then I talk about their case.
No, well, I'll tell you what, we've got a real problem in our prisons, because the Muslims, the Saudis, are spending millions and millions of dollars to get the literature into the prisons, and they're recruiting the blacks just as fast as they can into this really very violent religion, and then promising them, when the chaos comes to America, the prison doors will be open. So, if you're in for life... plus 20 years, well, that's pretty good promise. You might as well join the Muslim religion, because what can the Christians offer you? Well, we've offered them something far better than what the Muslims can ever offer them.
Amen.
Yeah, and the truth, and we offer them eternal salvation. And, of course, the only way they're going to get eternal salvation is by killing infidels, like people like you and me. So, but, you know, we need the Christians in the prisons. And we need to get this message out to black and white and Hispanic and everybody who's been there. And, you know, it's amazing. Sure, I'm not alone, but those of us who have radio ministries, we have what we call the captive audience. Those are the people in the prisons who have so much time, and so many of them will write to us and request a books or, you know, newsletters or whatever it may be, or they just want somebody to write to. And, you know, we try to get writing back. Sometimes it takes 3 months, but we try to get everybody that needs a letter, and we, of course, send them free literature and free books and things like that. You know, because what a hopeless situation to be in. And certainly if we don't offer them the hope of Christianity, the Muslims will be there to recruit them into their violent religion for their evil purposes.
Amen. And I have to say, I've met many spiritual giants over the years. I've been praying in the prison with people for a long time, basically because even though I had gotten experience as a lawyer, you know, you always need the Lord to take over the case so that the right thing is done. And when I get, you know, I always leaned upon the Lord in those circumstances. And so I'd have my client, I was like, it's going to have to be your faith. It's going to have to be your walk if God wants to give show mercy to you, because this is a bad situation. And these people would grow in the Lord so tremendously and start ministering to me, and that blesses me. But that has been a real nice privilege. I had to do it because of financial situation, but the Lord has blessed me because I've been praying in the prisons again, and he does marvelous things there. And yes, you know, the devil goes in, but, you know, the Lord goes in better. That's what we are. We're standing witness to that we're a small group, but we have the majority on our side because we have the our Heavenly Father on our side, and we're in the midst of what looks like people marching straight into hell, and yet we're bringing them into the kingdom of God, and it's such a privilege. That's all I can say.
Well,
such a privilege.
Well, it really is. Well, of course, Bourbon Street, they still have their wild and festivals there, the Mardi Gras and all.
Oh, of course, yes. And we're speaking, you know, people have been responding. The press went crazy with our video. They were shocked and dismayed and, in fact, jumped on the bandwagon and asked the city fathers to do something about it in terms of decadence. You know, our whole industry now, we don't have oil and gas anymore, and we don't have any other manufacturing industries. We're basically relying on tourism, and people are under the mistaken impression that the tourism has to be Girls Gone Wild and the homosexual festival. And so we've gotten a lot of fight from the merchants in town because our summers are our lower season, and this gives a good boost. The millions of dollars that these 100,000 homosexuals bring to the city. However, they could come, that they don't have to have the orgy on the street. You know, the police should be arresting them. You know, there are laws on the books, and that's what we've just gone to the city and asked. There are laws on the books, and we're asking for the same thing at Mardi Gras time. There are laws on the books. No more nudity on the street, please, et cetera. There's no need for that.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you're going to get an entirely different class of people. If you are going to have a load of nudity, you're not going to have any families coming. You're not going to have the good people coming. You're going to have the depraved people coming. On the other hand, when it's clean and wholesome, well, the majority of Americans are still good people, and the majority of Americans don't want this sort of blatant nudity. And there are all those, you know, the sort of person who'd go to the Burning Man festival, would want the. But that's not the majority of the Americans. They only get maybe 35,000-45,000 people out to that. But that's not the average American. The average American still is good and worthwhile, and he still remembers the things as they were, the Brady Bunch, and he'd like to get back to that sort of a life.
Absolutely. You know, I was, I don't know if you saw the recent Brady Bunch that came out, but, I mean, it was heartbreaking. I cried. It's a comedy because it's the Brady Bunch today, them living today, and how you know, how horrible it is today. It's heartbreaking. It wasn't comic to me. It was supposed to be a sweet comedy, but they showed, you know, all the things that are going on today that the Brady Bunch would have to experience if they lived today, and it's a heartbreaking thing.
Sure it is. Well, we've lost America, and I don't know whether we can regain it. We may not be able to, but at least we have an obligation to try so that generations yet unborn can experience that light of freedom, which can only be found in a moral nation, because you have two choices. You either have moral people and limited government, or you have immoral people and an authoritarian structure, because you can't have an ordered society with immoral people. It just doesn't work.
That's right. We can't. Without morality, you have, I keep talking about this, in 1984, you have, a government, a dictatorship that controls you and wants to suck any joy out of your life. And that's what, it's so fascinating. You know, my daughter knows all these terms and phrases from 1984, but can barely get it anywhere, and it's certainly not required reading. She's in the grade that I was when it was required reading for me, but, you know, I said, you know, Big Brother comes from this book, 1984, and, you know, I'm trying to get her to read it, but she says she has too much homework. But anyway, it's just, we're moving so quickly towards 1984, and
war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Those were the slogans on the Ministry of Peace.
That's right, and that's not what we have now.
Right,
freedom is slavery.
Not only that, but we have Emmanuel Goldstein. Of course, he's got a long beard and wears a turban. That's the Osama bin Laden, but he was the arch villain of 1984. And, of course, whenever you had to have a villain to unite the people against, and so that's Osama bin Laden. And why we hate Osama bin Laden. We, of course, nobody ever asked why our government keeps rescuing him, snatching him just about the time he's about to be captured. Why in come the black helicopters to scoop him up and cart him off some other place. So,
right.
You know, we can't have anything happen to Osama, you know, and now, of course, why we replaced him with the wicked Saddam Hussein. But you know, they're all the prototypes of Emmanuel Goldstein. And for those of you who haven't read the 1984 recently, get it out and read it. And you'll recognize everything that's going on today, including the video cameras everywhere watching you.
Absolutely. Now, also, you said freedom is slavery, and the Ministry of Love, since I just reread it, is the Patriot Act, you know, the surveillance and... I'm sorry. Yes, the Ministry of Love. All the police state tactics couched in the name of love. Well, couched in the name of patriotism, we've lost all our freedom. Freedom is slavery. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me that we're truly living in this time. And you know, having watched September 11th, it'll take just one more thing where we'll be in the concentration camps, and it's very distressing. And but I guess we'll have an opportunity to witness to a lot of people. There'll be a captive audience with us.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, this latest thing, FEMA, of course, the entire Office of Homeland Security is to be organized into FEMA. It's 170,000 government employees from 22 agencies will come under this common control. And, of course, everybody in the Senate, they keep arguing about whether they're going to have union representation or not. That isn't what the issue is about at all.
No.
What the issue is about the centralization of power with the federal government like they did in Hitler's Germany.
And centralize into the executive branch.
Right. And, of course, doing away with checks and balances,
right.
And, of course, limiting the power of Congress and its oversight of what's going on. That was what our founding fathers feared. They knew that men were corrupt. You could never trust them with power. And Senator Robert Byrd is not one of my favorite people. On the other hand, he's the only one who's saying what this is all about. And they're trying to convince us the argument has to do with union representation for federal employees, and that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. The reason that there's some people in the Senate who are concerned is because they realize that this is the pathway to the Enabling Act, the same situation they had in Hitler's Germany that allowed him, of course, to plunge the world into a terrible, terrible war because he had literally unrestricted power.
Right.
And, of course, that's U.S.
Now, how did he centralize? I know he got rid of the chancellor. or
well, Hindenburg was, of course, the chancellor, and there was a crisis there, and I think it was after the Reichstag was burned. And, of course, then he said, look, you know, those wicked communists have burned down the Reichstag, and I need the Enabling Act. And when I have the Enabling Act, well, I will, of course, I won't use this. I won't limit the power of the individual states, you know, German states. And this will be used very, very little. But, of course, I need this power to deal with those wicked terrorists. I mean, those wicked communists. And of course, that
I need this Patriot Act. I mean, Enabling Act.
All right. And, of course, well, see, we have the Office of Homeland Security. We have the U.S. Patriot Act. We have the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. We have the civilian corps under which TIPS, that is the Terrorism Information Protection and Prevention System. And, of course, that's where we have the spies. We have everybody spying on everybody else.
Right.
And then you go down the list of things that they're doing. I mean, we have literally a lawless government today. I mean, the judges keep saying, you've got to do this, that, or the other thing, and they're saying, we're not going to do it, sorry.
Activism has allowed, you know, you were talking to a gentleman the other day regarding semantics on the, right after Mr.
Oh, that was Desert Owl, right.
Right, and he was correct in terms of, but he had it in the wrong. True, like 1984, changing of the language and its meaning, especially in terms of law, it has been very important to those who wanted to change the language. And we're shown that by the Fabian socialist, Orwell, that's what there was an intent to do. But what he's missing is the judicial activism, that the judges have taken whatever their feelings are, and rather than looking at the common law and precedent, they just go ahead and write law continually. And we see this with the partial birth abortion. It's the most extreme form of that because, of course, that's murder. And our church went up to, on October 2nd, 2000, we went and stood before the Supreme Court with what we called the Phinehas campaign, because Phinehas in the Old Testament took a dagger and stopped the plague against the nation by, you know, stopping the adultery around the temple. Well, we wanted to stop the murder around our country, especially in terms of partial birth abortion, and we gave letters of rebuke to every one of the Supreme Court justices that voted to legalize this type of murder. And that is an extreme example of judicial activism. I teach my students, you know, the most powerful group now in our country, or had been, at least at the election time, was the Supreme Court. Now, with these Patriot Act and Homeland Security and everything being put into the executive branch. And by the way, all my students are listening. Hello, because I teach them all this. Now the checks and balances that I taught you all about is off. Okay, I gave my lesson. But anyway.
No, actually, because this is going to restrict the power of the judges, and I'm not saying I'm nothing against that, but you know, but I want the checks and balances. I don't want any branch of government to have all powerful, and that's what this is really all about. And you know, the most interesting thing is, Tara, this was all planned long before September 11th. Everything was scripted. They were waiting for this. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you doubt that, you need to get the parts 2 and 3 of the report that's called the Phase 2 and 3 reports from the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century, and those are available to our ministry. And, of course, we have the Phase 1 report and then Phase 2 and 3 bound together. And the Phase 3 report, which came out in January 31st of the year 2001, about 8 months before the terrorist attack, and there it was. They called it the National Homeland Security Agency. But it was essentially exactly what's happened, this idea, we're going to have to centralize all power with Washington, D.C., limit the power of Congress, limit the power of courts. We need a more efficient government to deal with terrorism. And here they're talking 8 months before about terrorism. They knew that there was going to be terrorism here in America. In fact, their Phase 1 report had come out in September 15th of 1999, describing almost exactly what would happen with the terrorism, the weapons of mass destruction right here in the United States. And then the FBI said, gee, we had no idea there was going to be an attack here. Maybe they should have read the government report. It was all there. But of course, if we hadn't given those terrorists enough rope, they never would have been able to blow up the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. We're going to be back in about 3 minutes with Tara. We welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America listening to us or here in the Central Coast of California, why I encourage you to call us. But we need to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're dependent on those of you who believe in what we're doing and would like to partner with us in our effort to educate the American people. And now with almost 50 outlets across America, a little over 50 outlets, and of course we try to pick up new stations anytime we find a good station, and we have the funding for it, but we have to have the funding before we can step out. So if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe there's a problem, if you believe, as I do, that the only way to reach people today is by radio, because you're not going to be able to get them to read a book. Most of them have been so dumbed down or they're so addicted to television or the other things. But you can never tell when somebody's going to be just sitting in their car surfing the dial or sitting at home, and they may hear a voice come out of nowhere. I like to tell the story of James Kennedy, Pastor Kennedy. And he used to be at one time a dance hall instructor. He ran the Arthur Murray Dance Hall. And he was, of course, working late at night, get up 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and this, oh, of course, he always had the radio set to a station, and somebody had changed the station. And so he's sort of groggy as you are when you're waking up in the morning, and he's not really awake, and he hears this voice out of nowhere saying, "If you were to die tomorrow, where would you spend eternity?" And he's sort of shaking his head, looking around, where did the voice came from? And then the voice said again, "And if you were to stand at the gates of heaven and ask, and St. Peter would ask you why you should be admitted, what would you say?" And a voice said, "I'd say I'm a good man." And the voice said, "That's the wrong answer." And it was the radio. The radio did come on, and he was listening to a man named Dr. Barnhouse, the great evangelist of the years past. And within a couple of months, James Kennedy was on the way to a theological seminary. Radio had changed his life. So that's why we do what we do, hoping that perhaps something that we say may cause people to begin wondering, where indeed are you going to spend eternity? And if you were to stand before the gates of heaven and be asked, why should you be admitted, that you'd know the right answer. And so if you'd like to partner with us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. Our freedom, our faith, our families are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Tara Pembo. And Tara and her husband have a street ministry there in New Orleans, and they, of course, were on the front lines of the spiritual battle. And Tara does, of course, as a lawyer, she's not practicing law now, but she's teaching it in a college there. And I'd say your students are lucky to have you there, because you know, it's so important that the young people do get the truth. So many of the things that they learn in school today just aren't true.
That's right. And they're, you know, they really like the truth when I tell them the truth. And I've become very popular because of the truth. There's only one that we had come back from we had gone up to Washington on the stem cell research right before September 11th, by the way. And there was a prophet with us that had said to the White House, "Judgment's coming, and coming, this is your last and final warning," and then, of course, September 11th. But, of course, now we have the understanding that Washington was somehow involved with that. At any rate, she went running screaming out at I just mentioned that I got back from standing against that, and she got upset and left. But everybody else loved it. You know, they like the truth. They want to hear the truth. I don't get much fight in terms of the truth. And because the truth does set one free. You know, and So I'm really blessed to be able to speak on the law and with, you know, because the way I was trained, when you go to law school, you're trained how to be a perfect liar. I mean, lawyer. You know? I mean, that's what you're trained to do, to figure out ways to break the law. So only with Jesus Christ in the mix do you get truth.
I had this wonderful story this last weekend. I told it once before, but I think I can tell it again, about, of course, this group of Islamic terrorists, and they hijacked a plane filled with lawyers, and they made these demands as far as release of some of their fellows who were in prison, and said if their demands weren't met, why, they were going to release a lawyer every month, every day, why, or every hour, something like that. Anyway, the idea that would be a terrible, terrible thing for society.
Yes.
Well, you know, but we, you know, of course, there are good lawyers out there. There are bad lawyers, just like there is in everything else. The trouble is that the foundation of the law is no longer based upon the scriptures and truth as it once was. And now, of course, it seems to be how you bend the law and twist the law and win the case rather than what is justice. And justice, if there is justice, it has to have a foundation built upon truth and righteousness, and of course that takes you right back to the scriptures.
Right, and we do, and again, since we still have a basis in Blackstone, who did speak of the law of nature and nature's God, which is our Holy Heavenly Father, we still have the best system. But, you know, and lawyers, you know, in terms of the 9/11 thing, they're suing the Saudis, so you got to bless them for that. I mean, they're the only ones. Our government won't go against Saudis, so lawyers are doing it. So their entrepreneurial spirit often gets justice by accident, perhaps, but some justice at least is sought.
Oh, you know, it's really very interesting. There are two groups of lawsuits that are being brought as a result of 9/11. One is against the Port Authority and the owners of the World Trade Center, and the other is against the airlines. And then there's the lawsuit against the Saudis. But, of course, the administration has done everything they could to block all of these lawsuits because they don't want discovery. They don't want them to be able to get people under oath and really find out what happened. And so they have done everything they could to block these suits and to discourage the people from suing and to say, well, we want to be part of the suit, too, and we want to get all the evidence and we want to be able to control what evidence is brought up because, and then, of course, we can't, you know, let any of the evidence out because we don't want Muhammad Atta to find out what we knew about him. You know, something.
No, doesn't that make sense?
Well, very little makes sense. In fact, the administration has done everything they could to block this commission that is both the House of Representatives, now the Senate, has voted for. I think that probably the reason that they have done that is because they now have worked out some sort of a deal where they're going to be able to control the input of information. That's what they're doing with the Senate committee. The source of the information to find out the responsibility of the CIA comes from the CIA. And, of course, the FBI. So they're controlling the input of information. They get a chance to censor it after the committee's gone over it. And yet still, if you read the report, and we actually have been offering the Joint Commission report through my ministry, you know, they're very inexpensive. It's only about 30 pages, but 30 pages of damning information, and that's the information they didn't censor out. I'd like to see what they did censor out. In fact, we, of course, have accumulated a lot of that on our own, and it's in our new video, 9-1-1 Contrived, 9-1-1 Contrived. And of course, now with the information that has been released and a great deal of other information, there is no question in my mind that they knew the attack was coming, and some people knew when it was coming, because not only was the mayor of San Francisco warned 10 hours ahead of time, or 8 hours ahead of time, to be cautious flying the following day, but according to Newsweek magazine, a number of high Pentagon officials canceled their flights for the 11th of September on the 10th of September. And the people always say, oh, well, of course, they probably got lots of warnings. Well, you might get a warning, but how often do you cancel your flight for the next day? You have to take that warning very, very seriously. And if they knew that there was going to be an attack on the 11th of September, why weren't pilots warned? Why weren't our airports on the alert? Why weren't airports checking everybody of Mideastern descent going out of those planes? And, of course, none of the right things were done. And the only logical explanation is somebody did not want to stop the attack.
That's right. And now, also, interestingly, a friend of mine, a relative of his, worked on an aircraft carrier, which she called her family the night before and said, something big's going to happen in New York. We're moving our aircraft carrier over there. And the aircraft carrier was there by September 11th. For what reason, she told her family, I don't know what it is, but we need to move the aircraft carrier over to New York Harbor, which is very interesting.
Well, there were so many. I mean, they said, gee, we had no idea there was going to be an attack in America, and yet the Mossad had told them there was going to be an attack in America. Jordan had told them. Morocco had told them. Putin had told them. The German intelligence had told them. The Spanish intelligence had told them. But shucks, we had no idea there was going to be an attack in America. I mean, you've got to be, I mean, you just, it defies all thought, all imagination that they think that the American people are that stupid. See, we had no, we thought it was going to be overseas. I mean, we ignored all of these countries that had actually had agents working inside Al-Qaeda, and they did. But of course, what they don't want you to know, and anybody out there would like the clipping out of USA Today from the 4th of June, we'll be glad to get that for you. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But in that clipping, they say, and this was derived from the CIA's own documents before, of course, they were censored. CIA had agents inside Al-Qaeda, and they knew they were going to hijack our planes, and they knew they were going to fly them into the World Trade Center. So when the administration says, oh, we just never suspected anything like that, why, of course, they're lying. And, of course, you would think that they would have fired George Tenet instead of the president visiting him immediately after the attack and congratulating him on a job well done. In fact, I have a book written by a high CIA official who quoted, I should say, he was a station chief in the Middle East, and he quotes a reporter who said that he was told by a high CIA official that when the dust is settled after September 11th, what had happened would not be looked upon as a tragedy, but as a triumph for the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, the only way it could be a success or a triumph would be, of course, if the attack was for another purpose, and that was, of course, in my estimation, to draw us into war in the Middle East.
Also, for those former CIA heads that worked for the financial markets or what have you, the ones that invested all that money, I'm not sure. I don't know anything about stocks and bonds. I'm not good at that, but they made all those investments that would make them a lot of money as a result of airplanes crashing.
And somebody, nobody has checked that out because, of course, it would lead right to the Central Intelligence Agency, at least according to Michael Rupert, who has checked it out. Well, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you'd like to join us, if you have a question or comment, our guest this evening is Tara Pembo. And Tara is a lawyer who is not practicing law, but teaching law. But of course, she and her husband are involved in the street ministry there in the French Quarter of New Orleans. And, you know, if you've never been to New Orleans, it's really an amazing, amazing city. The French Quarter is an exciting place to go. There's always a sort of an air of excitement there. But of course, there's also this underlying theme of depravity. Which, of course, and then, of course, when you get into the fashioning, into the Mardi Gras bit, why, there, of course, they're really things really get pretty much out of line.
Right. Well, at Halloween, I want to ask you a question, but at Halloween, we have also now something that's grown into a huge festival. It's the Voodoo Festival.
Voodoo Festival.
Yes. It used to be that the Voodoo Queens had a small ritual on Halloween Eve in Congo Square, which is now Armstrong Park. But now they've taken over City Park. It's become sort of a rock festival, but it's all, there are true voodoo practitioners there selling you their wares and teaching you their spells and et cetera. And, the first year that came up, we did stand against that. We went out there and warned people, you know, voodoo is a true it's truly occultic, and it'll truly get you in trouble, and you better not go in. And we put a letter in the newspaper asking that pastors stand up against it, and also asking the city not to allow, you know, make it a rock festival or what have you, but voodoo is a wicked spirit that's been over our city, and we don't need that. And, well, we had no success at the Voodoo Festival in stopping that. It's grown significantly each year.
Now, is that on the public land?
Yes, it's all on public land.
How could they have a religious festival on public land? You couldn't have a Christian festival there.
You just gave me a great idea, Dr. Stan. You're absolutely right.
Oh, you know, do they still have that voodoo shop right there on Bourbon Street with all the shrunken heads and all those?
Oh, yes, yes. Marie Laveau's shop, yeah. And, yeah. In fact, there's more. In fact, on Decatur, they have all these, that's just voodoo. Now we have a whole row of Satanist shops. It's heartbreaking because people really get involved with it. But yeah, we have Decatur where it meets Satan Street, St. Anne, and the voodoo shop's on St. Anne. I mean, Satan Street really is that's the spirit of the place. I like to talk about the spirit of the place. But I wanted to ask you something. We were back on 911. I sent you a $20 bill.
Yes, you did.
Thank
you very much.
Yes, I know, but it was folded.
Yeah, right. I saw how it was folded. Why don't you describe to our listeners what the significance of the folded $20 bill is?
Well, I've been seeing this soon after 911, and I have not heard anybody speak on it, but you fold the $20 bill into a paper airplane, and you get a perfect picture of the Twin Towers and where they're exploded and hit.
Right.
And then you turn it over. On the other side, you have a frontal view of the Pentagon after it was hit.
I mean, it's the most amazing thing.
Amazingly, it looked exactly like it.
Well, you know, there's only two possibilities. Either this is just a happenstance, or this was all planned. Somebody knew. And in 1996, when they laid out the plan for that bill, why this was sort of an inside joke among the people who really knew what was coming down the line. Now, to the average individual, they'd say, that couldn't be true. Well, I believe it can be true. I believe that our currency, I mean, all you need to do is look at the back of the dollar bill and understand the symbology of all the 13s and the 32 feathers on one side and the 33 feathers on the other on the eagle, and read what the Masons say. That tells you the 32nd, 33rd degree, you know, the Masonic symbol over the top of the pyramid, 13 stairs, 13 stars, 13 arrows, 13 olive branches. 13 had nothing to do with the 13 colonies. It was occultic. So I would see no reason at all why they wouldn't have done something with our $20 bill. The fact that you could find this on one side, but the fact you would find it on the other side as well, I'd say the chances of that would be, sort of like a life starting in the slime pits and turning out to be Albert Einstein.
Or a whirlwind in a junkyard, maybe
right.
An airplane.
I think somebody knew. But the longer you study this, the more you begin to understand. There is a script. And our friend Bill Steblin tells me that in the early 1980s, he was told by Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist, when he died, by the Masons, said he was the greatest the Masonic philosopher of all time. But Manly P. Hall had told my friend Bill Steblin about the first Gulf War, about the coming Gulf War in the year 2003, 2002-2003, and then, of course, about the biological attack that would occur in America following that. Now, this is in the early 1980s, and Manly P. Hall has long since gone to his just rewards in hell. We know that there were a number of letters that were written from Albert Pike to Mazzini. Now, I've never seen a copy of the letter, but they describe the three great wars. And, of course, this was written in about 1870, but it described the First World War, the Second World War, and the coming World War. Now, a friend of mine, I won't mention his name, but he's written about this. He told me that he was going to get a copy of the letter from a man who was coming down from Canada some years ago to bring him a copy of the letter, and he up and died just 2 days before their meeting.
Wow. Wow.
Do things like this happen in real life? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they really do. And if you don't have the protection of the Lord, why, you have a very, very short lifetime doing what I'm doing. And I know a number of people have died under very strange circumstances. So far the Lord's protected me, and I hope he continues to protect me and my family. And I think that's because a lot of you out there are praying for us, and we really appreciate your prayers. But I believe that everything going on is scripted. And I believe that it is not simply coincidence that if you get that $20 bill, and we actually took pictures of that, Tara, and I was going to use that in my new video, 911 Contrived, and then it just didn't quite fit in after we had all the pictures and everything was all set to go, and I thought, well, I don't want to detract from the rest of it, because even though I believe it's true, I believe that things are scripted, I believe that there are evil and supernatural forces out there that know exactly what's coming down the line, that I don't think that the average individual who sees that video would be able to accept that. They might accept everything, and one fact might turn them off. So I try to stick strictly with the facts and the things I can show them, but we still have that. We've recorded that. My son has that on the computer.
Great. I want to point out, I apologize, I don't mean to interrupt you, but when I show that to individuals, it is the best lead-in to talk about it, because they all go, look at that. Every one of them goes, look at that. And I say, look at that. And I say, the bill was made in 1996. Now, what's also interesting is on one wing is United, and that was United flight hit that building on that side. And then the other one says America, but American flight hit the other building on that side. Also, I folded the $10 bill into an airplane on my own, and it is a bird's eye view of the Golden Gate Bridge having been exploded in the middle of it. Now, you'll have to see that on your own, because I didn't send you a $10 bill. But that the flight that went down in Pennsylvania, was on its way to San Francisco. So I find that interesting. But, of course, we can't prove that. But they spoke about it often, that the Golden Gate Bridge, remember, a week later, we think the Golden Gate Bridge is going to get hit.
Well, of course, we can't say the Golden Gate Bridge won't get hit sometime in the future.
Right. But I praise the Lord that, he reveals these things to us. And when you walk in the truth, these things become plain. But it just frightens everybody who does know the Lord. So then I have an opportunity to start witnessing to them. It's like, they all have a sense that there's something going on that's just not quite right.
Well, what sort of response are you getting as you street witness to people now? Are they more open than they have been before?
It's about the same. I was going to ask my husband, but because unfortunately I've been teaching for the last several months. So since 911, actually we had a great response right after 911. Our church was filled and people were praying, and people who weren't walking with the Lord began walking with the Lord, but that soon faded. As we all know, if anybody in the ministry knows, that there was a resurgence of spirituality. But what happened was is those books came out on spirituality that included, these bestsellers with Buddhists and witches and Chuck Colson. It muddied the water.
Sure.
And I'm upset with some. I don't mean to pick on Chuck, but he should not have put his... In one sense, maybe he should have, because then he could bring the Christian perspective to a spiritual book. But at the same time, it muddies the water, because others, I listen to other side's network radio programs on Saturday night, Art Bell and the like, and they're waiting for the quickening, and the great deception is here, and it's called the quickening, where all of us, peoples of the book, the Christians, we're not going to be able to make it to the next evolutionary level, and we're all going to be gone.
Do they say that?
Oh, yeah. You've quoted some of the people that...
I quote from Barbara Marx Hubbard, who talks about that quarter of this population that will not evolve to the higher level, but they're going to have to be killed, according to her, or removed, and that's not up to a Hume idea, that is up to us, for we are the riders of the pale horse death, which, of course, was her quotation.
Right. Well, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
They talk about that, in fact... the children, and there's some that speak of the rapture, and of course Dick Eastman's books and wonderful Chuck Missler's books talk about that a lot of things that have been channeled by demons say that for some reason the people that can't evolve will sort of just disappear. So that blesses me because the rapture is real. I mean, I believe the word, I believe that we're going to be taken in a twinkling of an eye, but it's neat that the devils know it, too.
Well, I think these are exciting, exciting times, and I think that I really honestly believe that this next year will give us the best chance we have ever had for reaching people for our Lord.
Yeah.
And all we can do, of course, is be there and offer the information, whether people accept it or not, it's their decision. Really, it's God's decision. We just do our best, and they can either accept or reject what we say. Well, what do we have? Well, we've got Nathan. I guess, Nathan's probably going to be on after the program. We'll, if...
Nathan, I love Nathan. A Jewish, or is he a Jew for Jesus?
No, he's Jewish, and one of these days I think he's going to become a Christian. But that's I like Nathan. I've known him for many years, and he's a very sharp young man. And so you must listen to a lot of our programs down there, then.
I don't miss a program, Dr. Stan. As I told you, my husband says I'm your biggest fan. I get all 5 hours.
Do you really?
Well, I'm a night owl, so after my work is done, my relaxation is to sit and listen.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Well, I appreciate the fact that people actually do enjoy what we do, because our programs are really very informal. We have very little structured programming. We just try to get interesting guests on and then utilize that to get ideas out, to get people to think and to challenge them. And if somebody as well educated as you are can sit there for 5 hours a day, why, hopefully we can get some other people at least to sit for an hour a day.
Well, I have 60 students are going to be listening to you, so hopefully they'll get hooked on you, too.
All right, fine. Well, look, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Well, most importantly, lift up the name of Jesus, and if you don't know him, please invite him into your heart, because he will be able to really... He is the way, the truth, and the life, and he's the one that can really have you latch on to the truth, and bless y'all.
God bless you. Thank you so much. Give my best to your husband.
I sure will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Tara Pembo, and involved in the street mission back down there in New Orleans, and that's what her husband does. She's doing a little teaching now to give up the practice of law to basically try to bring people to the Lord. Well, that takes a great deal of dedication, but there are a lot of wonderful people out there who love the Lord, and maybe we're only talking to the remnant. I don't know. All I know is that God has given me a microphone and the ability to do this, and little bit by little bit we've been able to expand our ministry to, over 50 different outlets now, and hopefully we'll continue expanding with your help and with God's blessing. So until tomorrow evening at the same time, while we ask you to pray for America, we ask you to pray for our leaders, we ask you to pray that we don't go into this battle, but God's going to determine whether we're going to go to war, and I fear that we are going to war. Under any circumstances, just keep your eyes fixed on the Lord, and please remember to pray for our ministry, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
doing fine. How are you? Well, we'll just wait and see, you know. Each of us has to make the decision on our own. But, you know, when I mentioned your name, why, Tara, who listens all the time, she's an extremely smart lady. Have you heard her before? She actually has a street ministry down in New Orleans, she and her husband, and of course she teaches law at a community college to make a little money there. Ed, did you want to, you're welcome to keep that if you want.
Thank you.
You're welcome to it.
No,
okay. Anyway, it's just Ed and Arnold, more of the same thing.